there's this rapper who's now been caught on tape, and he calls himself War Machine 3. War Machine 3. This is his given name. He came out of his mother, and she looked down at him. She said, "I shall call him War Machine 3. His father was War Machine 2, and his grandfather was War Machine 1. And so he's now tweeting, and he tweets, "Dear white people, if Trump wins, young N-words such as myself are fully hell-bent on inciting riots everywhere we go, just so you know," which is really just wonderful. And now there's another rapper. His name is Maine Music. This is Maine Music, and it's spelled, of course, Maine like the state, and music, M-U-Z-I-K, because there's been some sort of blanket ban in the rap community on spelling in English. We now have to we have to spell everything incorrectly. So Donald Trump is actually spelled Z-X-U-M-L. Donald Trump. So here's what he had to say about Donald Trump and how he wants to kill Donald Trump, actually.
"Take the army to war, take the brave team to war. I go to war with who I want to, but I really want to go to war with Donald Trump, because Donald Trump trying to take food stamps from my mom, and that's all the fuck she got."
It continues along these lines. It doesn't make for great radio because literally every other word has to be bleeped. So there's that. Also, you can't really understand what he's saying when he is speaking, and it's not bleeped. Sean King, who's a white guy who pretends to be a black guy over at the Daily News and gets paid for it, he wrote a column on this today, and he sort of said the same thing. He said, "I wrote a column about the word again in Trump's slogan. I think it's a racist dog whistle, and it gets to the heart of the point of the hat Crystal Lake was wearing." That was the name of the 22-year-old. Her actual name is Crystal Lake. No, that's not a stripper name. That's her real name.
Episode 12. Episode 12, everybody. The Dirty Dozen. And shout out right off the top to Maine Music and War Machine 3 and Ben Shapiro. Just the hottest.
What's the deal with mud people?
Yo, Ben Shapiro's got these screets on fire. He's the hottest underground artist right now. Him, Maine Music, and War Machine. Fucking keeping the streets lit.
Yeah, Ben Shapiro is going to pick up the mantle that Troy Ave dropped since he caught a case.
Well, it's funny you bring that up. I actually, I'm a fan of Ben Shapiro. I'm a fan of rap music. We're both fans of rap music. I invited him to the Troy Avenue concert at Irving Plaza last week. I don't know if he showed up or not. Unfortunately, I think he missed out.
That's a shame. There was something that happened there that I think Ben would have really, really good if Ben was a part of it.
But just to all of our listeners, if you thought that maybe we were kidding about torturing you with more and more Ben Shapiro clips, you were wrong.
Yeah, no, there is we're progressively adding more Ben Shapiro to the point where probably by episode 50, it's just going to be us replaying, chopping and screwing Ben Shapiro's podcast and just our voices over it. You'll hear, I saved it till my marriage. And then air horns and damn, son, where'd you find this? This is a virgin untouched track.
Breitbart, L.A. yeah,
real
no, we're
hip hop music.
Ben Shapiro show, real hip hop music.
Get the bumba blood clots out of the bathroom.
There's still so much more juice to be squeezed out of this orange shaped boy. But what do you say we start the show?
Let's do it.
Let's do it.
Chapo, let's go. Okay, we are back. It's episode 12 of the Chapo Trap House. I'm Will Meneker. With me is Matt Grisman.
As they say on Gambo's Thrones, Velour Morgellons.
and Felix Biederman.
Hello, everybody.
In just a little bit, we'll be talking to Virgil Texas about... we'll be taking a look behind the curtain of the Carl Digler character, and I think really taking the definitive deep dive into the phenomenon that is the auteur Ron Fournier. It's pretty amazing. I think you guys are going to love it. But before we get to that, I just want to say... Happy Memorial Day. We are recording this segment, of course, on Memorial Day. So I just want to say, if you're a millennial, fuck you. If you're not storming Omaha Beach or taking Iwo Jima, Get the fuck out of here, back to your safe space. If you are a millennial that did do any of those things, congratulations, more power to you. We support that.
Wait a minute, though. Today is only for the dead ones. If you survived, fuck you.
Pussy.
I think if you didn't have the balls to die in combat, you can get fucked.
Here's my
enjoy living under the fucking underpass, motherfucker.
Here's my impression of a millennial. Duh, why can't I use my gender degree to buy lattes? Here's my impression of somebody the same age in 1945. Oh, I think I'm going to go land in France to free it, and I don't even care about gender. It's not real. I'm agender.
They truly were the best, and I just want to say, as a millennial, we're shit. We're nothing. We're fucking cockroaches compared to them.
The only thing that even approaches how good the greatest generation was is Gen X. That's it. That's it. The only thing approaching it, even.
So, before we get to our conversation with Virgil Texas, I just want to touch on one thing that's a bit of a follow-up. Now, if you are in the Chapo Grey Wolf inner circle, if you are now a subscriber to our podcast through our Patreon site, you will have already heard last week's bonus show where we roasted the fat off that scumbag Joshua Faust. If you are not in the Grey Wolf inner circle and you are still part of what we call the Kasich level of supporter, which means you're just, you know, freeloading and just downloading the free shows and charging your phone in our lobby and asking us for money so that you can get a cab to see your mother in the hospital, shit like that, you will have not be familiar with the Josh Faust bit. But let this be sort of a plug to encourage you to sign up again, join the inner circle, and you will hear us roast Josh Faust. But I want to follow up on that because we mentioned that this dickhead quit Twitter last week because
and LinkedIn
because he got owned so hard because he tried to come at the king and he just like tripped over his own dick basically. During the week, subsequent to that, someone sent me screenshots of this asshole's Facebook post about why he quit Twitter. And it's fucking amazing. And it's absolutely true to form to everything that we said in the bonus show. And I just want to read one or two things from Joshua Faust's unbelievably self-pitying Facebook post. He says, however, those who know me will not find a recognizable version of me in the portrayal being spread by partisans in this conflict. But it's impossible to argue that those who have convinced themselves that, to take one particularly special example, I personally murdered dissidents in Uzbekistan for corporate overlords in the oil industry. Okay, Josh, nobody said that you personally murdered anyone. All we said is that you work for the people who do that.
Yeah, I would have a lot more respect for you if you like if you were like a wet work guy, but you're just you're shit. Like you're the PR flunky for the guys that kill people. That's what we were saying. Everyone who was talking about you was like, oh no, yeah, this guy's a piece of shit because every dictator just calls him up and is like, hey Josh, can you write a poorly worded article about how the mass murder I did wasn't that bad? But no one actually thinks you have the charisma, courage, or even shoulder strength to fire a weapon.
And it's telling that he lied about it in exactly the same way that he lies about everything else, where, like, he takes something that's a little bit true and just exaggerates it or distorts it, like, by about 5 to 10% to make it seem like people were actually accusing him of, like, killing striking oil workers or something. So he's a liar. And then the other thing he did is he said, to be blunt, the spectacularly vicious homophobia that I've received is worse than anything I've ever experienced coming from the right. So again, he uses the fact that he's gay as like some kind of, I don't know, pink shield to protect him from moral accountability for his actions.
I mean, because the way that I see him writing on stuff, I would assume that he would spend all of his time when he's not working for these merchants of death, like sitting in a fucking broom closet staring at the wall until he comes back out again. I wouldn't imagine he had any kind of interior life or human interactions at all. So the idea that he has a primal sexual attraction to anyone is just kind of oddly humanizing.
Yeah, Josh, in my headcanon, you are asexual. Like, you reproduce outside of biological sexual terms. Like, people like you and Speech Boy, you just, like, cut off a bit of your tail and you plant it in your, like, you plant it in your garden and then another pundit grows. And that's why all of you guys look alike. So, like, yeah, no, I think you're a fucking abomination and not a human being. But no homophobia towards you at all. Or anyone. Chapo Trap House, we have gotten into trouble with our sponsor, AKP, because we refuse to be homophobic. So now who looks like the fool?
So yeah, to all of the people that are still at the Kasich level of support, if you become a member, if you become a subscriber, this is the kind of excellent content that you will hear in addition to the 90 minutes or so of great content that you get for free. We will be doing more Duck Hunts, more Chapo reading series, and more just all-around funniness and hijinks with a bonus show every week for just $5 a month. So,
and thank you to everybody who has donated so far. It's been pretty amazing.
Yeah, you guys are, like, I know that we're really ironic and we don't ever say what we mean, but, like, you guys are fucking awesome. This is some of the most fun I've ever had, and I'm, just really heartened by how much you guys are supporting it. Thank you, guys.
Thanks to all the Grey Wolves, and thanks to all of the, just anyone who listens or shares or just tells us that they like the show. Really, I mean it. All right, so what do you say? You want to get to Virgil, Texas?
Fuck yeah.
All right, let's do it. Okay, so we're joined now by Virgil, Texas. You probably know him as just all-around online funny person. But more importantly, he is one half of America's most accurate political pundit, Carl Digler, who he has created and writes along with our own Felix. And as this election has gone on, Carl Digler has received more and more press coverage and accolades because of his uncanny ability to out-predict the mainstream media in terms of calling these primaries. And, you know, so a lot of people have talked to you guys and they've sort of tried to get at, you know, what makes Digler tick or, like, how you guys write Digler, but they've only just scratched the surface of all the material that there is to be had. So I guess we want to talk to you guys now. We're going to sort of peel back the curtain and look at Carl Digler behind the inanity and examine some of the major influences on the Digler persona.
First off, let me just say thank you all for having me. It's a real pleasure to be here. I'm a huge fan of Keeping It 1600. I got my red Solo cup ready to fist bump the news with you guys. Let's get to the bro down.
Hey, this is John Favestar, and we're talking about the biggest Mitch McConnell fails of the week. In 1998, Mitch McConnell said that he would confirm any Supreme Court justice he met with. But now he's gotten straight into a proving his own point fail.
If you ask me, Donald Trump is a lot like the guy on your lacrosse team that just insults everybody because he's not very good at lax. You know what I'm saying?
Hey, man, this is Desmond Pfeffer back here, and we're going to be doing Flip Cup with Henry Kissinger later. Stay tuned for that.
Yo, I want to give a shout out to William Calley, who sponsored my frat's rush.
So, like, Carl Digler has, like I said, he has many fathers, and not just you two guys. So, I mean, how do you want to begin? Like, what would you say, there's sort of a holy trinity of influences on Carl. So where do you want to begin?
Well, failure has many fathers.
Yeah. There are two main ones. Secondary fathers we would bring up. We want to save the third one for last because he's the most important father. But, you know,
and he came out of nowhere, actually. I had no idea who this guy was before we started.
And then he changed our lives.
This is going to be a very inspirational story, so please listen on.
Please hold on to your seatbelts. But so the first two pundits we looked at
Well, the first one, the very first one we looked at, our editor was like, I hate this guy. You guys need to screw with this guy. It's almost like the Diggler Project started out as our editor's personal vendetta against this guy.
It definitely was, yes.
Definitely was. Chris Saliza, a.k.a. Chris the Fix Saliza from Washington Post's The Fix.
He is The Fix, but he's the eponymous Fix.
There is no Fix without Chris Saliza, right?
Oh, yeah.
And it's funny because he's not the managing editor of The Fix. The managing editor of The Fix is another guy.
Our fantasy about Chris Saliza is that the managing editor, like, he went on vacation or something, and then Saliza was like, I'm The Fix now. You can't do anything. Like, he came back, and he's like, no, this is mine. You may... It's like how in The Sopranos, how Junior holds the title of boss while Tony is the street boss. And Fix is like, all right, I'll give you enough tribute to earn, but I'm The Fix now. My kid is The Fix Junior. My wife is Mrs. The Fix. You fucking got that?
So you okay with this?
Do I have a choice?
Yeah, you got a choice. You can continue to run the game.
You know I'm under fucking house arrest, you cute fuck.
So maybe for people who aren't initiate in these mysteries, like, what is The Fix, and like, how would you describe what Chris Saliza does? Like,
oh man, all right. I actually know about The Fix because I read I used to read in college, and The Fix would do like these fucking listicles before listicles were even a thing, of like the 10 closest Senate races of 2006. And I eagerly, you know, lapped this up because I'm like, oh yeah, I'm interested in Senate races. It looks like Tom Coburn has moved from number 10 spot to number 4. Got that right, Fix.
The top 5 tallest congressmen.
Yeah, it's shit like that. It's just like dopey, asinine, just buffoonish crap filtered through this middle-aged man who calls himself The Fix, calls his son Fix Jr., calls his wife Mrs. Fix. He doesn't. Read his fucking columns.
Okay, that's not a joke. He actually does call his family.
No, he does. Yes, he does. And like, they're
the Fix family.
I thought there was a provision in the Violence Against Women Act against this sort of thing. But apparently in this day and age, if you're powerful enough, you can just get away with calling your wife Mrs. The Fix.
So Chris Saliza, like, he writes in this fucking blog, he writes like, sorry I'm late for The Fix live chat, where he answers everyone's stupid questions, because I had to pick up Fix Jr. from soccer practice. And it's like, this kid must be the most humiliated fucking kid in the world. Like, his fucking dad drives up, and it's like, here for Fix Jr.
Yeah, hey, the Fix mobile is here. Meanwhile, they're just like they're punting this kid behind the fucking warehouse where they keep all the balls.
So The Fix is like, it's like politics, but keeping it really loose.
It's like they're trying
frivolous.
To yeah no they're trying to like have like be a little bit younger, cooler, a little bit looser, but still essentially regurgitate the same utterly banal and wrong beltway conventional wisdom. Right?
I agree with that, but there's except for one word, there's nothing really young about it. It's like old, out of touch Benny Johnson.
Yeah. So Chris Saliza is like Benny Johnson, like if he had been born. And like before the Carter administration,
with two key differences. One, The Fix is not a conservative, as far as I can tell.
No.
The other is The Fix is not like a craven sellout like Benny Johnson. Like, he really believes he's funny and like doing this public service. Like posting fucking at the same SNL videos. Like, now, they really got John Kasich this week.
But also, I mean, the people in his orbit at The Fix are also tragic failures as well. Like Philip Dump, who we've discussed in the past, and Callum Borchers as well.
Callum Borchers was the fucking button man that they sent after the dig, after Virgil's great article in the Washington Post about Dig's prognostication success. And they sent a guy. They haven't even made Callum Borchers yet. Like, they haven't even cut his finger over a picture of Tip O'Neill or whatever they do to make you like an official soldato.
Well, like I said, they sent that youngin on his first assignment to pull the trigger on you guys, and he missed spectacularly.
So bad.
Yeah, we wiped out their entire crew.
Philip Bump. I can't even make fun of Philip Bump.
He's like, I don't think he's like a terrible writer, but I think just by virtue of working for The Fix, he has to do dumb shit like, well, I did the math and Bernie Sanders actually gets $28 per donation. So ball is in your court, Bernie Bros. Yeah, after that, people like people are like, shut the fuck up, and called him like Philip Dump. And he was like, well, I've gotten hundreds of death threats. Bernie Sanders supporters have fired a Stinger missile at my house.
Wait.
And put my son in a trebuchet.
Hold on a second. Now, Matt, this wasn't one of the dildo RPGs again, was it?
It might have been. I'm not sure. I need to check my sources.
Philip Bump is part of that like class of shitty writer, along with Harry Enten, who's, I would say, like 25% of their tweets are just like really wry jokes about how they get harassed all day, every day. It's like a fucking a picture of like a dumpster on fire. It's like, these are my mentions right now.
I always picture like Adolf Hitler after his speech at Munich. Like, there, Goebbels is like, excellent speech, my Führer. The international Jew will be petrified. And Hitler goes, yeah, but RIP my mentions.
I'm going to regret posting this.
But I had to.
Okay.
Yeah, no.
A mic drop.
It's amazing how easy it is just to go with the Third Reich joke all the time when you talk about these people. But it's always funny. It's always gold.
It's always good.
It's always A1 material. But okay, so that's father number one. Like you said, he represents the physical form of Carl Digler. But let's put Chris Saliza aside and move on to Carl Digler, father number two. Who is that?
That would have to be Mark Halperin. Halperin.
He's a big daddy.
Mark Halperin is the big daddy, right?
Mark Halperin, thick AF.
But Halperin is like, he's one of the like the big Washington D.C. He's probably the big Washington D.C. like political reporter, right? He wrote the two books, like the campaign books about the 2004 and 2008 election. Game Change. And then he wrote the book about the recount. They all get made into HBO movies. So like, you know, Halperin's got some juice. Him and John Heilman. But like Halperin, he's always on like the cable shows and the morning shows and all that shit. So what's Halperin's deal? I mean, aside from just being awful in every respect.
Halperin, like, Saliza, what Saliza wants to do is what Halperin does. But he's not, like, Halperin is just, he's...
Like, Halperin is quite influential, I would say.
Halperin's very influential.
Like, if you're running for president, you want to ingratiate yourself to Mark Halperin.
Halperin is clever. He knows how to, like, make himself important. He knows how to give his books, which are just, like, horse race bullshit, but he gets better information or better gossip than other people, how to give them a veneer of respectability.
Well, he knows how to create a narrative. Like, he knows how to write them, like, like a narrative, like a story that is, like, you know, that can be understood and is page-turning and has characters and things like that.
Yeah, he's a good writer.
Access also.
He's just, in the act of writing, he's a very good writer. And, but if you read his read his Bloomberg columns, it's just like bullshit. It's just, like, you read his debate recaps, and he's like, I gave Hillary just these arbitrary grades. Like,
I mean, I think what sums up Halperin, it is exactly that thing where he can, like, he'll go into the debate and be like, substance, like D-. Virtually everything Trump said was, you know, just a tissue of lies and insults and vulgarity. And nothing he said was true. And then overall, he'll give him an A because, like, of his style or flash, or that he connected with voters in some vague and amorphous way.
I'm picturing, like, a future video where Mark Halperin walks by. And they're all, like, all Future's crew is like, damn, that bitch thick. And Future, like, the next scene is Future dancing with Mark Halperin. So come and get this dirt. We need that fix, that medicine. I know you like it like this when you get that itch. Adrenaline, heartbeat out of your chest. And when that pressure's building, I got what you need. Come fuck with me. And when you get that feeling, I got
okay. Yeah. Now we've laid the groundwork here of the. Is it time now to transition into the ultimate father?
Oh boy!
Oh boy! Yeah.
The greatest father. Now, we talked about Halperin and Saliza and a couple of the other sort of, like you said, beltway oafs that orbit them. But sort of like back in our 13 hours Benghazi street fight episode, like, those other guys are just hacks. Like, they're just hacks. But the guy we're going to talk about now is almost is a hack, but he's, like, the greatest hack of all time. That, like, he it's sort of, like, he has passed through hackdom and is now an auteur at what he does. Like, there's nobody...
He's transcended.
Yeah, he's transcended hackdom into, like, a kind of...
He's like the David Bowie of hacks.
He's the star child of Washington political reporting. So would you like to introduce the final ultimate father?
Give us an hour. We'll give you the world.
Yeah. We have a story. This story starts with a man. This boy is born in Detroit. Growing up, he sees both sides of every issue. When a bully punches a nerd, he goes, "Hey, well, maybe, you know, the nerd provoked him."
He stands up in math class and says, "Why don't we study Spanish?"
During JV basketball, he thinks that both teams should have equal points. Later, this boy goes to college and he falls in love with journalism. He goes, "Hey, profession where I can tell the truth? Well, that's what I've been doing my entire life." Boy goes to Arkansas. Virgil, what happens in Arkansas?
A boy gets a job. Why are we talking like the...
This is like Cormac McCarthy.
He's a fucking legend.
It sounds like fucking Blood Meridian. Yeah. You guys are ready
it
right
is.
Now.
It's Applebee's Blood Meridian.
See the boy. He's eating the boneless chicken wings.
He goes to a small town. He gets his first journalism job at a small town in Arkansas. Small town newspaper. I'm going to call it the Fayetteville Gazette. It could also be the Hot Springs Chronicle.
We don't really know.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah, who gives a shit?
While he's there, if it had not been for one pivotal historical moment, this man would still be there, laboring away at the weekend-only online edition of the Hot Springs Gazette, covering school board meetings and JV basketball scores. But no, this man had the good fortune to be a reporter, a local government reporter in Arkansas at the time that William Jefferson Clinton was governor. Mark Fournier ended up at
Ron
the...
Fournier.
Ron Fournier.
God damn it.
We fucked it up. Bleep
that. Ron Fournier ended up in 1989 at the AP Bureau at Little Rock, covering Bill Clinton.
And this is exactly the same time that Bill Clinton was, you know, getting his dick wet with every waitress and trafficking cocaine out of the Little Rock Airport. Do I have that correct?
Yeah, during the...
When he killed those troopers.
During the Arkansas...
Like, when he killed
Arkansas
all those people,
massacre.
Right?
Yeah, during, like, yeah, the Khmer Rouge of Arkansas, Ron... Yeah, Ron was covering that. Bill Clinton rises to a national stage, and Ron rises with him. He's covering Bill, and they... Everyone in the AP, everyone in Reuters, everyone in Washington Post, everyone in New York Times goes, "This Ron guy, he's the Clinton expert."
He knows so much about Clinton from his years of experience covering the Clintons in Little Rock. In 1992, Bill Clinton, governor of the backwater state, 49th and everything, unseats President George W. Bush. And in 1993...
H.W. Bush.
George H.W., well, it's still a W.
Yeah, so there's also a W.
All right, so... Proving my point.
Oh, yeah. How does that feel?
In 1993, the Clintons move into the White House, and Ron Fournier moves in to the AP Washington Bureau as their White House reporter.
And if you remember the explosive Clinton years, Travelgate, Whitewater, oh my God, Ron was at the forefront of all this, going, "Well, Bill needs to show some leadership." And America was like, "Oh my fucking God, who is this truth teller?" This guy will blame both sides for everything.
These were the years of Nannygate, David Brock and the Arkansas Project, where they compiled lists accusing the Clintons of all these murders.
Okay, like you made the joke about a young Ron Fournier being in math class going, "Why aren't we studying Spanish?" And like the both sides thing is really what is Ron Fournier's specialty. This is, I think, what separates him from the pack. And actually, right now, I just want to read just a bit of a piece that Ron filed on May 18th of this month.
We read it.
This is Christmas for me.
In the Atlantic, okay? And the headline here is "The Counterproductive Politicization of Transgender Rights." And then the subhead is, it's possible to get the right policies the wrong way. And like that, that is the most Ron sentence of all time. Like, yeah, that is the most Ron Fournier sentence of all time. So, okay, it begins like this. The United States' two major political parties don't know how to balance a budget. They can't seem to curb economic anxiety, modernize the social safety net, or restore the public's faith in government. But they do one thing really well. The Democratic and Republican parties pit people against each other. They stoke animus in America. The latest example is the fight over transgender people in public restrooms. While protecting the rights of transgender Americans is a cause I support, from cradle to grave, including public toilets. That's an odd way of I support transgender people from cradle to grave.
I support the right of transgender people to be buried in public toilets.
Yeah, Ron's, by the way, Ron's, like, if you really asked Ron to craft a transgender bathroom policy, it would be like, well, every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, all bathrooms are only for trans people. But the other days, but the other days of the week, trans people have to stay at home.
Well, if you ask me, we need a grand bargain so all men can use the women's bathroom and all women can use the men's bathroom, but not vice versa.
And by the way, if we could tackle our budget deficit issue, maybe we could put more porta-potties around.
What I love so much about this is it perfectly captures like the Ron Fournier method, which is this blinkered and idiotic belief that that politics is about finding consensus between two completely opposed ideologies and like ways of viewing the world, or like essentially politics is always going to be about conflict between two competing groups, and he's always blaming politicians and you know he's like, the problem with politics is that we can't find some way to come together. People have animus for one another.
He seems,
and that's
really
the real problem.
He honestly believes that everybody in America has at base the same goals that don't conflict with one another. That there is a hypothetical
which are privatizing
world,
Social Security.
Well, there's a hypothetical world where everybody is happy basically because everybody wants, in broad strokes, the same thing, and politicians, rather than reflecting conflict, create it out of nothing, and it wouldn't be there otherwise, which is just insane idiocy.
In this article, he says that he totally supports the rights of transgender people to use the bathroom of the gender that they identify with. But then he goes on to fault Obama for essentially making an issue out of it, or sticking up for it, or talking about it in a way that makes the people who are terrified of transgender people whipping out their penis in front of their daughter or something look anything less than totally innocent, or that they like, or pretending that they have like real concerns that could be addressed rationally, patiently, and calmly, which they don't. That's the point of the whole issue.
Right. No, they don't at all. Like, the bathroom warriors are just like the weirdest collection of freaks and losers, from Ben Shapiro.
I mean, they want to, they're all, I mean, go on Facebook. Every other fucking thing is somebody fantasizing about how they could legally beat somebody to death in a woman's bathroom. There's nothing.
Yeah, there are people.
There's nothing that the Kenyan usurper could possibly say to these people to make them change that, to get rid of that visceral enjoyment of imagining.
And like, in Iran's fantasy world, these people are like, they're like, well, you know, this guy may be a Salafist and a fucking terrorist and a piece of shit. I hate him and he wants to kill me and take my guns. But the way that he understood my fantasies about slitting a trans person's throat for looking at my daughter that I don't have, that, like, it's really changed my mind.
It's so funny,
Ron,
it's so funny that he is so hard on Obama, because Obama really does govern a lot of the time like he has the same ideology as Ron. Like, Obama loves to go out and try to give these speeches that are supposed to fix everything, you know? And he tries so hard to let me be clear. I understand these people's issues, and I understand these. He's always doing that. He's always doing it, and
he's always
does
saying
nothing. Of course
he's only saying,
because nobody gives a shit what he has to say.
I want to bring this up because this is actually the first time the name Ron Fournier entered my consciousness was back in the heady days of when I was a liberal blogger in the Blogspot days. You can check out my archive at emperorshrubwatch.blogspot.com, and I blogged under the handle Sparky Southpaw. And I made it into Wonkette once, but they never gave me a call back because they said my writing was too comprehensible to the average person. So this was something that came out. I'm just going to read now from the SourceWatch website. Quote, in a U.S. House of Representatives committee report investigating the White House's media management efforts over the death of from friendly fire of Army Ranger Pat Tillman and the rescue from an Iraqi hospital of Private Jessica Lynch, noted that journalists, including Ron Fournier, had made suggestions on how to manage the story. The draft report stated that, quote, Karl Rove exchanged emails about to Pat Tillman with Associated Press reporter Ron Fournier under the subject line H-E-R-O. That's not hero, but hero spelled out was the subject line of the email. In response to Mr. Fournier's email, Mr. Rove asked, how does our country continue to produce men and women like this? To which Mr. Fournier replied, quote,
very carefully.
No, Mr. Fournier replied, quote, the Lord creates men and women like this all over the world, but only the great and free countries allow them to flourish. Keep up the fight.
Oh my God.
And then he says, Fournier, when he was called out for this, Fournier responded, I was an AP political reporter at the time of the 2004 email exchange and was interacting with a source, a top aide to the president, and in the course of following an important and compelling story, I regret the breezy nature of the correspondence. But now, I think it's worth mentioning, this is, of course, in reference to Pat Tillman.
Yeah, and let me retract that. Pat Tillman is not a hero, and the Lord did not create him. I am a Unitarian, and Pat Tillman is like every other man, no more, no less.
No, I regret saying that Pat Tillman is in heaven because he's very possibly equal chances of being in purgatory or hell.
Or my preference, limbo.
Ron Fournier's heaven is purgatory.
But I mean... It goes a little. I mean, like, it seems like Ron is just a hapless idiot, but what he was really doing here was helping the White House create a propaganda story out of the death of Pat Tillman, that he was killed charging an enemy embankment, you know, running up a hill, charging a Taliban position, and was killed while saving his fellow soldiers, which we knew then and at the time was a complete falsehood. He was killed in a friendly fire incident in Afghanistan, but immediately after his death, the White House tried to make him into this huge, basically a recruitment poster for everything that was mm-hmm. great about the war and the Bush White House. And here's Ron Fournier just happily, blissfully saying, keep up the fight, Carl. So there's something a little bit more sinister with Fournier than maybe we're giving him credit for.
I don't think there is anything more sinister. I think he's just very credulous. And then after 9/11, he was, you know, one of the DC guys like, well, everything has changed. Time for us to come together.
Yeah, I don't think Ron has it in him to, like, put in this, like, very, like, it, you know, if you read the email and if it was by anyone else, you'd be like, oh, this guy's a piece of shit. He's, like, exploiting this guy's death to further ingratiate himself within the press pool and the White House and get more prestigious stuff. But Ron's, like, legitimately a fucking idiot. And we know this because we've pretty much read every word that Ron has written and seen all his TV appearances and even read his defunct website, Hot Soup.
Actually, hold on a second. Can we talk about Hot Soup for a minute?
Yes. Oh, hell yeah, we can, motherfucker. Hot Soup.
Can you explain to our listeners what Hot Soup was and how it fits into the Ron Fournier mythos?
Oh, all right, motherfucker. Okay, so imagine, you know, you're going to your fucking blog. It's 2006. You're going to, like, Shrub Watch. Or if you're, like, more of a right-winger, like, bloodandhonor.exodus.blogspot.
Just, like, Instapundit, actually.
Instapundit talking about fucking robots and killing Muslims.
And you're like, hey, it looks like Americans are more polarized than ever, and they're in an echo chamber, and it seems like they're eating hamburgers, which are just solid parts not touching each other, when really they should be just gulping down some soup where all the beliefs and ideologies and viewpoints are mixed up. Hot soup was a creation. It was financed by the most evil families in America and around the world, but by their failure second sons.
Yeah, the unlanded sons.
Was the Bin Laden family associated with hotsoup.com in any way?
No, because Bin Laden was the main son.
He was the second son. But like, hot. So basically, like, it was, who is the guy who was running it again?
Okay, so this was founded by a consortium of these guys who were like Republican and Democratic, like consultants, basically. These guys who, like Matthew Dowd was one of them.
Yeah, Matthew Dowd ran the entire thing.
Yeah, who worked on Bush in 2000, Arnold Schwarzenegger in 2003. And after these campaigns were done, you know, he had connections and he had some money. And he's like, what's the one thing I can do? How can I further my success and impact the world? And if you're like a normal, competent person, you're like, okay, I'm going to be evil and like fucking run arms to Saudi Arabia and just make a shitload of money.
Yeah, just do coke and like have an open marriage and go to fucking Key Party. It's just going to be great. I'm going to do this till I die.
Or, you know, or alternately, you start a podcast called Keeping It 1600. or what Matthew Dowd and like four other fail sons did was create a community.
Yeah, and hot soup. So the other money they got was from other second sons. Like, I imagine there was like a senile Saudi prince who heard that Hot Soup was appointing Ron Fournier to run their entire politics bureau and was like, Ron Fournier is the best journalist in all of America. I will give you $100 million. Like, Hot Soup had a fuckload of money and it looked terrible. And
I guarantee Jeb Bush was a silent investor.
Jeb Bush was like, oh, this might be too radical for me, but I like your mission. Jeb Bush gave them like $20 million. And
so it was his idea to create a website that covered politics, but through the Ron Fournier, should be like, you know, tepid soup, like mentality that, you know, the problem is that everyone believes the same thing, but they're artificially divided by, ideology, which is stoked by greedy politicians or some bullshit like that.
And Ron also had a theory of how hot soup would succeed. Now brace yourselves. Ron has something we like to call the influencer theory.
Oh yeah.
And this is,
it's from his book. He wrote
Applebee's America.
Wrote a book called Applebee's America with Matthew Dowd. I still don't know what the central conceit is.
Oh, actually, hold on a second. I have Applebee's America right in front of me right now.
I think that leads into hot soup. Yeah, you need this theoretical background. This treatise from the Das Kapital of our time, Applebee's America.
I'm going to read from the jacket copy for Applebee's America right now. It says, in this era of technology, terror, and massive social change, it takes a deft touch to connect with Americans.
That's every era.
Applebee's America cracks the 21st century code for political, business, and religious leaders struggling to keep pace with the times.
This is like a feeble version of like these, you know, businessy kind of like social books, like, I don't know, like Freakonomics or that kind of thing. I still don't know why it's called Applebee's America, what the Applebee's theory is, but it's going to have some crap like that. Like, it says, 5 steps of KFC, like some shit. Yeah. And, here is one very important part of the book is Ron's theory, which I guess kind of comes from like, I don't know, like sociology somewhere. Are you familiar with the idea, that book Bowling Alone?
Yes. It was like a sociological book about that essentially used the decline of bowling leagues and, you know, VFW halls and things like that to portray the kind of increasing atomization of American life. And,
right. Yes. Thank you. So Ron's theory is the influencer theory. I don't know if you call it that, where one out of 10, what? Jesus Christ. One out of every 10 Americans is an influencer. Now, this is the person, this is the neighbor on your block you go to for advice about everything. What computer should I buy? What color should I paint my yacht? What's the best preschools in America? And his theory was that if you're like a politician, or like a, I don't know, like a marketing guy, CEO or whatever, you just need to like identify the influencers and just appeal to them, and like that will I guess trickle down to the 90% of dum-dums.
Right, like Ron's, so yeah, Ron is like a 5% Nation of Islam guy, because he's like, 90% of people are blind, 10% of people know the way. That will tell you the best restaurant if you ever go on vacation in Sarasota.
And now let me just pause and say that influencer theory is completely wrong.
It's bullshit. Can figure out. It's terrible.
But I think it's purely based on just Ron just like has a stupid brother-in-law who says that he knows everything, and Ron is just getting terrible fucking advice from the same guy.
Well, like, can I just like Ron has this one brother who's like caused him to get Lyme disease, and be thousands of dollars in debt. And Ron's like, oh, I love my brother-in-law.
Can I just read a little bit more from the jacket copy here? Because it goes into
some
bullet points from Applebee's America. And it says, whether you're promoting a candidate, a product, or the word of God. It keeps going back to religion. It's so weird. It says, the rules are the same in Applebee's America. And this is the first bullet point.
The rules are the same.
Okay, it says, this is the first takeaway point. People make choices about politics, consumer goods, and religions with their hearts, not their heads. Number two, successful leaders touch people at a gut level by projecting basic American values that seem lacking in modern institutions and missing from day-to-day life experiences.
Let me just pause and say, I believe John McCain's people read this book.
Oh yeah, this is
Mark Salter, who was John McCain's like closest advisor and speechwriter, I believe, he tried to hire Ron Fournier as their communications advisor in the 2008 election.
Applebee's America has legitimately changed the course of history by sinking campaigns.
Yeah, like this guy literally, like, the people who live in DC are so fucking stupid that this guy probably to this day is like, that would have been our race if Ron just joined us. Like, we blew the Applebee's strategy.
Okay.
And let's not forget that Marshall Applewhite also read it, which is how he got all those people at the Heaven's Gate commune. It's like, you know what? I'm a real influencer. And they did go to Applebee's a lot. I believe they went to Applebee's at like their last meal before they all died. Yeah.
I was gonna say, the influencer theory reminds me a lot of the Khmer Rouge's ideology. Like, peasants are influencers.
Is it called Applebee's America because Ron owned a failed Applebee's franchise where he applied these principles?
Yeah, if there is an enterprise to be done, Ron has tried it and failed at it.
Influencers eat free on Friday.
Sorry, this is the last bullet point from Applebee's America. It says, a person's lifestyle choices can be used to predict how he or she will vote, shop, and practice religion.
Why does he like religion so much?
The authors reveal exclusive new details about the best, quote, life-targeting strategies.
Life-targeting strategy. So, like, Ron talks... So, if we go back to the last bullet point, Ron talks about how people are sick of spin and marketing bullshit. And then in the next bullet point...
He says, quote, life-targeting strategies.
Yes. He's like, well, he just goes into, like, this political Amway seminar.
And, of course, people crave authenticity, which is why they're going to fucking Applebee's every Friday. No more authentic dining experience available than having some of those artisanal, farm-to-table, boneless chicken tenders.
Oh, my God. Okay, well, we've done, I think, probably the deepest dive into Fournier that any human beings has yet even ventured to do. But lastly, can we please discuss Love That Boy?
Of course.
Can we talk about Love That Boy?
We got a copy right in front of us.
Okay, Love That Boy is Ron's most recent book. It came out this year. It came out like last month, right? It's very new.
Yes. Go buy it.
Yeah, please, everyone go buy Love That Boy. It's essentially his kind of like memoir about his son and like bonding with his son over like on the campaign trail.
Kind of. He actually takes a break from his job to take his son around, like spend like father-son time. And one thing about Ron is he is, by all accounts, a very compassionate, loving father. And I say good for him about that. Basically, what happened was Ron's son was diagnosed with Asperger's. And this this was like a few years ago. And Ron, at the time, AP Washington bureau chief, like this precipitated something of a midlife crisis in him where he's like, well, gosh, I've been spending so much time working on politics that I forget what really matters in life. So he basically takes his son along. I have not had a chance to actually read this book. So in this segment, Ron has taken his son to the White House's 2010 media holiday party. Tyler and I are now... I should do a voice. Tyler and I are now standing in line at the party, a gold-fringed red carpet beneath our feet and a crystal chandelier above our heads. A tuxedoed waiter offers Tyler a flute of cranberry juice. Nope, Tyler says. The line inches closer to President Obama and First Lady Michelle Obama, who are posing for pictures with members of the White House press corps, a decades-old tradition meant to ease tensions between reporters and the reporting. Critics consider this press party a prime example of Washington's incestuous culture. That's right, but that's not the point of the story. This is about my boy.
I love Ron! For the record, we think Ron is like a great parent. Like, he seems like a fucking great parent because he's a sweet man.
Absolutely.
But man, is Ron a shitty reporter.
Ron is wrong. That's the organizing principle of Ron's life, is that he's wrong. He's wrong about everything. All of his assumptions are wrong. This is what happens when you're like a reasonably decent person who's never been encountered Marxism. Like, you have no ideology. Like, instead of class, a class conception of history, you have an influencer conception
of history. No, I want to disagree here. This is probably going to be, people are going to record this, is the schism of Fournier philosophers. I think Fournier would be the same guy he is no matter what ideology he picked up. Like, if Ron was a Maoist, he would be like, oh, well, one out of every 10 villagers is a seed for the revolution.
But you know what? I'll agree to disagree, but I would like to get Sam Chris to weigh in on
this. Yeah, we would like Sam Chris to educate this, but...
He's going to say something like, Ron's a Hegelian, fundamentally, and then, like, use all these Greek words that no one...
Yeah, we don't. The Greek isn't a real language. But then me and Virgil would be like, yeah, Ron's the greatest, you're right.
Okay, I think we should close out there and just say... Thank you, Virgil, for coming on and sharing this magic with us. It was amazing. I think a little bit of Ron now lives in all of us, and that everyone who listens to Chapo Trap House is an influencer.
Hell yeah.
Love that, Ron.
Love that, Ron.
I'm going to celebrate him by going into the ballot booth this November and voting for everybody for every office.
Okay, we're back once again. That was Virgil Texas talking with us about just the beautiful mind that is Ron Fournier. Love that, Ron.
Love that Ron.
And I just want to say one thing I loved about that interview with Virgil was that, like, Matt and myself, we really kind of like, we took a back seat on this one, and we got, like, what you got was like to see like the real deal go down when just Felix and Virgil get on a roll together. Like, you get, no other media outlet could like give you like that kind of unadulterated creative process.
You witnessed the magic happening.
Yeah.
The dark alchemy that creates Carl Digler every week.
Yeah. Like, so this episode, it's coming out on my birthday, Tuesday. This Tuesday is my birthday. And this was kind of like, this was, I guess, my present to myself. Like, all I really want to fucking talk about is pundits with Virgil. Every single time we hang out, we talk about, like, Ron and Chris and the whole Fact Friend Brigade for, like, 7 hours, and it's made us unable to really be full members of society. It's probably sabotaged several potential relationships for me, and it's, I'm going to die early because of it, but I love doing it, and it was, I couldn't have picked, like, a better... I couldn't have picked a topic I would enjoy more for my birthday show, unless, like, you guys let me do an entire show about Rich Piana, which I don't think you'll let me do.
No, we're going to do that. That's coming soon. But, that's the kind of stuff that you would not get from Reply All. They would have no idea what to do with this kind of goal.
Shout out to Reply All, though. They got Dig a lot of followers.
So... I think we should close out the show instead of doing a duck hunt, because really the entire show was once again sort of a duck hunt. We want to do a reverse duck hunt and just like just all praise due to Ron Fournier. We love you.
I hope you live forever.
Ron, I hope you see the day when politics is finally cleansed of all of that awful politics.
Disrupt my hole, Daddy.
But one last bit of business. Felix mentioned that it's his birthday tomorrow. If you're listening to if you just got this, it's probably Tuesday. I know we're not giving you a lot of warning on this, but if you've been following us, we've been promoting it all throughout the week. On Wednesday evening, June 1st of this week, all three of the Chapo boys, Matt, Felix, Will be doing a live show with WBAI's Katie Halper and special guest Rania Kolick. I'm sure you're familiar with her as well. We're going to be doing a live show with them at the Brooklyn Commons at 7:30. Look it up on our Facebook page. Look it up on the Chapo Twitter. But we're doing a live radio show and podcast with, like I said, with Katie Halper and Rania Kolick. It's going to be in Brooklyn. It's going to be live. It's going to be awesome. So please come if you can make it on Wednesday evening.
We would love to see you guys, and we think it's going to be a great time. And also, we are drawing straws later tonight, and one of us is going to have to say a racial slur.
This will actually be the
Hope
first
it's not
time
me.
This will actually be the first time all three of us are in the same room, right?
That's right.
That is true. So yeah, if you come on Wednesday night, you will be you'll be part of Chapo history. You'll be witnessing a momentous event. And like I said, it's going to be really fun. And if you can make it out on Wednesday night, definitely come through, and we'll probably go out for some drinks afterwards.
It'll be like when Marx met Engels.
Absolutely.
Or when Erdogan met Gül.
before the bad times happened.
Fucking snake.
Fuck the Gulen.
And Gül.
Okay, so let's. So we're gonna go out with fire new track. This is some original hip hop, some real hip hop music. Felix, you want to big this one up?
Yo, put that motherfucking burner down. Get off the block right now. Get to your computer. You're just gonna want to bang this track.
This is the hardest
shit on the street right now. This is motherfucking Dem Whiny Boys with Nook If You Cuck.
This is the 2016 Tear Up the Club anthem. Whiny boy, them whiny boys. Nuck if you cuck. Roll it. We out. Till next week.
Peace.
Peace.
Dear white people, I'm just going to give you my view of things. America was never great. I could go to war with whomever the F I want to. Donald Trump trying to take food stamps from my mama. Food stamps from my mama. My mama.
Food stamps from my mama.
And that's all the F she's got. The young N-word, such as myself, are fully hell-bent on inciting riots. Everywhere we go, everywhere we go, everywhere we go. Just so you know, I'm down with Peggy Noonan. I'm down with the black swan that was Reagan. I'm down with the foundation of the greatest country in the history of mankind. It has made your rights possible. Reagan, Daddy, Peggy Noonan, Mommy. Reagan, Daddy, Peggy Noonan, Mommy. Donald Trump, Daddy, Peggy Noonan, Mommy. Reagan, Daddy, Peggy Noonan, delightful. Delightful, delightful.
Julie, you must never listen to this.
I know, Werner. I'm never going to.
And you must never look at the photos that I've seen at the coroner's office.
I will never look at them.
Yeah.
They said it was bad. Now you know why no one's gonna hear it.
I think you should not keep it. You should destroy it.
Yeah.
I think that's what you should do.
Okay.
Because it will be the white elephant in your room all your life.